Welcome to the Full Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 9:12 p.m. That is British summer time. Today is July and 31st, so at the end of the month. And the yen today was down about 1.13 versus the dollar. So this is the dollar finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's in response to the Bank of Japan fudging what they are doing in terms of yield curve control. So when we look at those JGB yields, they're still marching higher. And that's following through on the move that we had on Friday. So this is the market voting with its feet and getting out of bonds. And they are, though, helping to appreciate stocks. And of course, that's in response to the depreciation of the currency. So the stock market automatically reflects the devaluation of the currency. But on top of that, it's giving a boost to Japanese exporters. So I think the most important thing to point out is this is a first step above the base. We had JGB yields trading below 20 basis points from 2016 through to the end of 2022, then it broke higher. It ranged for most of the last 7 months, broke out last week, and is extending that advance in here today. So just in pure technical terms, this is a new uptrend. And what the Bank of Japan has basically been saying is that they're probably going to intervene at 1%. Well, I think actually what they said was they're definitely going to intervene at 1%. And then that they would probably intervene at around the 75 basis point level, and that they're no longer going to strictly defend the 50 basis point level. So that's a lot of different levels where they say that they could, would, or maybe will intervene. But of course, what it really means is that they don't want a rout in the currency. But what it's, well, of course, the other side of that is that what they're really trying to do is manage the currency lower. So when we look at what that means for a hedged exposure to Japan, well, the DXJ, the Wisdom Tree, a hedged Japan equity ETF, pushed on to a new recovery high. I think, in fact, it's a new all-time high for the fund in here today. Now, it's an extended trend. There's absolutely no doubt of that. But as long as the stock market is firm and the currency is devaluing, then the trend is going to continue higher. Now, I think then let's also just pay attention to what's going on in China, because we had a good-sized rally on Friday, and then it did improve upon that in here today, but didn't hold it. So now the CSI 300 is pausing here around the 4,000 level. Now, the problem, of course, is that the stock market and investors generally are in a show-me mood with regard to China. The government has said on several occasions that they're going to intervene, they're going to do what's necessary to support the property market, they're going to try and improve valuations, and they're going to try and enhance the supports for the consumer, for asset owners, for investors and speculators. And there has been very little in the way of actual substantive measures to accomplish those objectives. So every time we've had a rally, it has failed. And if this one is going to hold, well, then they would want to get about actually doing something concrete. Against this background, the renminbi is relatively unchanged in here today, but it is still very much in the region of the lows. And it's really a big question here whether this area of support is going to hold, with China attempting to unwind a property bubble. Then the risks are that they're not going to be as forthcoming with stimulus. And obviously, depending on how deep the rot goes, there will have to be some kind of stimulus eventually. But the market is probably just waiting for that to happen. And when we look at the H-share index, it had the big pop on the upside on Friday. It was in positive territory today, but it finished on the lower side of the range for the day. Now, in the wider Asian markets. We had a good size move in the Pakistani market. So after they've had the confirmation of their IMF package, the stock market has been resurgent. So if we look at the ETF, then we have a really strong rebound coming in from a very depressed level overall. And considering just how low it's gone, then we're in single digit multiples. So even small moves in the stock market on a hedged basis can translate into rather large percentage moves overall. And the Sri Lankan market also continues to move higher here. So within the what we might term the wider India environment, we're definitely getting more action, and particularly from those countries that have had some of their really deleterious debt issues. At least they've come to some sort of arrangements to deal with that debt burden. So we're getting more impressive rebounds. And then Vietnam, certainly not talking to the IMF, but the Vietnamese index continues to move higher. And it has been up for about 10 consecutive weeks. So this is a good sized rebound, and it's a clear indication that investors are looking beyond China, and they are looking at the countries that have historically benefited from offshoring and from basically moving manufacturing to more accommodative zones. So certainly there is more interest in the developing part of the Asian region. But the Taiwanese market was in negative territory today, and there's a lot of speculation going on right now around exactly what's going to happen in terms not of the most advanced chips, but the less advanced chips, those that are with, say, for example, a 10-year vintage. And China's investing a great deal of capital in building out manufacturing capacity for the kinds of chips that were cutting edge a decade ago. So today, Taiwan dominates the production of 3-nanometer chips, and those really are the cutting edge. But go back a decade and you're looking at perhaps the chips that have got a that are more to the order of 28 nanometers, and China is looking to dominate that, and they could easily flood the market with supply and make it an unprofitable business for much of the rest of the world, and they could potentially do to the less advanced portion of the semiconductor market what they did to solar. So there's obviously a challenge here, and I think this is really the argument I've been making about the semiconductors for quite some time. Now we've had this very impressive rebound in the Taiwanese market from the lows in October, just like we had on Wall Street. But there is a ton of money being devoted to building out manufacturing capacity, not just for the most advanced chips, but for every kind of chip. And when that eventually comes to market, there is going to be massive oversupply. And I think that it is at that point, then we're going to see exactly how amenable Taiwan is to overtures from China, because they are in a very strong position to be independent right now when demand is surging for their exports. But we could play this storyline forward 4 or 5 years, and there'd be a massive oversupply, and many of their companies could be in quite a bit of distress. And then the overtures from China might look a lot more friendly. But that's definitely a downside key reversal in here today, and downside follow through tomorrow would mark a peak of at least near term and potentially medium term significance. So then let's spin forward and then look at Australia, where the ASX 200 has been quite steady and holding here in the region of the upper side of this range over the last 6 months. So it definitely needs to continue to hold the 7,400 point level, and a downward dynamic from here would represent a failed upside break, and then it could easily come back down and test the 7,000 level. So we really are at an important do or die moment here for the Australian market. Now, when we think about Europe, the Euro Stoxx 50 popped up here to a new recovery high, and it hasn't been at 11, a level this high since 2007. So that's a pretty impressive breakout on Friday, and then some additional follow through on the upside in here today. And Europe certainly benefiting from the currency effect. When we just redenominate this back into US dollars, then it hasn't quite broken out yet, and it looks much more like a big range than a trend overall. So Europe could easily be a big beneficiary of renewed interest in ex-US markets in the event that the dollar breaks down through the significant 100 level on the dollar index. And the dollar was a bit steadier in here today, and it is unwinding the short-term overbought condition, and it is quite normal to have some support coming through in the region of both the 1,000-day and the 1,000-day moving average and that big psychological 100 level. Now, the 10-year yield today was a little bit quieter and pausing here around the 4% level. There is a lot of supply coming into the market, and that is a potential headwind for bonds. Let's just simply think about bonds like any other market rather than thinking about inflation and the trajectory of inflation, whether it's going to come down fast, where it's going to stop, or are we going to have deflation? And instead, think about the simple fact that the US government needs a lot of cash, and they're going to be printing a lot of debt and seeking to sell it. And then investors will have to make the determination about whether 4% is quite enough. So the fact that yields peaked back in October is probably more a reflection of the peak in inflation rather than any particular judgment about the or just how creditworthy the US government is when they have such an enormous quantity of debt that they need to sell. But we are starting to see that gold is appreciating. And the price is up about $6 in here today. And rather than gold being the leader today, it is at least steady. And it has unwound most of the decline that we saw last Thursday. And the price still holds the sequence of higher reaction lows. But then let's just continue to look at the broad precious metals sector. And platinum today was up about $16 and starting to firm again and coming up to test the $1,000 level with an upside key reversal in here today. And palladium has really been out in the cold and has declined significantly, and that was definitely in response to the falling demand for vehicles. And the anticipation that there won't be as much demand for internal combustion engines. But the price is steadying around the $1,200 area. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but that's about the biggest dynamic move we've seen in a couple of months. And then silver was also in positive territory in here today. So despite the fact that we had a reasonably steady dollar in here today, we've definitely seen some interest coming back in for the precious metals. And I think that is much more to do with the potential trajectory of real interest rates than any particular concern about the dollar. And it is the trend of real interest rates is the most important consideration. Now, let's then think about Latin America. And Brazil was in positive territory in here today and firming from the 120,000 level. And this is on the cusp now of Well, it has broken out to new recovery highs, but it hasn't quite yet exceeded the peaks from back in 2022 and 2021. But Chile has begun to cut interest rates, and Brazil has been among the most aggressive countries in the world to raise interest rates and stamp out inflation. Now they have the risk of a recession. So it's an ideal time with inflation well down into the low single digits that they can start unwinding all of those interest rate hikes. And when you've got positive real interest rates in excess of 10%, then you've got a lot of room to cut and support the economy. And that is, I think, beginning to be reflected in the stock market. And there are several of the fintech type companies have been and not really doing much of anything for the last year in anticipation of the Banco do Brasil eventually starting to cut rates. We're not quite there yet, but we're certainly looking like it is a more likely scenario. So then I think the big fly in the ointment for the global economy is oil prices. And Brent crude was up another 50 cents in here today. It's now exceeding the $85 level. It has clearly broken above the 200-day moving average, and it's doing so in a fairly dynamic manner and putting in new high, or excuse me, new advances one day after the next. This is now breaking the medium-term downtrend. And having been so inert for so long, which is uncharacteristic for the oil market, it is quite normal that we should anticipate a period of volatility. And that would suggest that now the break is on the upside and the surprises will also be on the upside. And of course, that will likely then stoke inflationary pressures as well and also help to instill confidence in, or at least instill fear, perhaps, in central bankers that they should be doing more to raise interest rates and quell demand. And of course, that is the risk for bonds as well, that if they continue to raise interest rates and we do get another inflationary pop on the upside in response to higher oil prices, then that's a very realistic possibility that we could have higher yields overall. And there is a big short position in the futures market attempting to bet on that particular outcome. Now, we should continue to pay attention to the Nasdaq. It has been by far the biggest performing mega or large cap market in the world this year. But it is pausing below the 16,000 level. Now, we're still in a consistent trend overall. We still have a sequence of ranges, one above the last. But valuations are stretched, and we have several RSI differences where the RSI index is going down and the stock price is going up. That's generally a bearish divergence. So it's not exactly a timing tool, because the divergence can last for quite a while. But when the momentum is coming out of the internals of a stock, then it's particularly important to highlight when we have such high valuations overall. And the index is back in the region of the peak. So it's a natural area where we should anticipate at least some pause and consolidation. I'm not convinced that the large language models are the be-all and end-all of artificial intelligence. I think that when artificial intelligence, particularly the big data models, are deployed in the healthcare or the energy or the material sector, then that is where the real value is going to come from. When you get an AI to write a draft and then you have to go back and you have to read it and you've got to check it for facts, then it is an open question whether you'd be better off just writing it yourself. So the big leap in productivity that's been predicted, I'm not entirely sure that it's in fact going to happen as soon as people anticipate. And of course, then we have the big question around autonomous driving, because there was a big hoopla around autonomous driving and artificial intelligence about 5 years ago, and we were all supposed to be driving autonomous vehicles by 2023, and that hasn't happened. And we haven't got the solid state batteries either. And companies have been pushing back the deadline for delivering those for several years. It seems like every couple of years they push it back by a couple of years. When that's not at all to detract from the pace of innovation that we have in the technology sector. And where you're seeing the forecasts for productivity, for I guess for developing a product, to be more correct, contracting is in fusion. It was always 30 years away. Now apparently it's 5 years away, but that's still a rolling 5 years. Well, small modular reactors are probably going to be a realistic timeline within the next 4 years, and rolling those out could take would. Could potentially be a big factor in helping to control energy prices over the course of the decade subsequent. Tesla is still hovering below the $300 area. It was in mildly positive territory today, and this looks like a consolidation, but it has quite an overbought condition to unwind after a 200% advance in the space of only 7 months. And then let's also pay attention to the uranium sector. There's an incredible amount of media coverage for the heat waves that we're seeing in the USA and in Europe. And I don't think anyone is particularly surprised that it does get hot in the summer. But we've definitely had record temperatures and very uncomfortable conditions in much of Europe, and that is primarily because that you don't have quite as much air conditioning in much of Europe, and whereas there has been record temperatures in the USA as well, but because there is air conditioning absolutely everywhere, it doesn't have quite the same effect. Well, air conditioning is very energy intensive, and it's an easy answer to improve the living standards of large numbers of people. Well, then air conditioning is a really easy way to do it, but it needs an electricity generating capacity, and if you don't want to burn fossil fuels, well, then nuclear reactors are definitely one of the ways to go, and the uranium miners ETF is starting to firm now again from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, there have been several false dawns over the last 2.5 years, but I think that it is a no-brainer that nuclear power is an easy answer. It's a proven technology. It's something that can be done, and with sufficient political will, it will be done. And if you want to decarbonize, well, then the easiest way to do that is with nuclear energy. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.